Hello and welcome along to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. I'm your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
If you've been struggling with anxiety or know someone who has been, then this podcast is for you.
Today, we're going to be covering some more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.
Ready? Let's dive in.
If listening to the podcast, you realize that you really want to work on some of your own anxiety, that it's become an issue in your life, it's affecting your functioning, then I would really encourage you to jump on my masterclass on how to reduce your anxiety. This is the best place to start. I cover what the journey looks like, how moving through anxiety works, and the mistakes people make that really hold them back. So click the link in the show notes to be able to come and join me on that masterclass. And I'm really excited to help you to start overcoming your own anxiety. All right, so today on the Anxiety Specialist podcast, I'm Becky, your host, and today we have Will Kesselman, who runs Control and Power Strategy, helping parents step-by-step through divorcing an abuser or narcissist, and his background in working as a special victims investigator. So I'm really curious to have you on. Thanks so much for joining us, Will.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd love to hear your story, your background, your experience, especially anything to do with your challenges with working through anxiety, and how you got to where you are today.
Well, first off, I still have anxiety. It doesn't go away. And I still am challenged and I deal with those challenges and push through them. So a little bit about me. I grew up in Montreal, Canada. I was bullied pretty intensely as a kid, as well as abused by one of my parents. And then I didn't grow enough in terms of a person. I got some therapy that wasn't enough. I read some books, but wasn't enough and all that, you know, good stuff. And then ultimately, I ended up marrying someone who is more narcissistic. And so I went through that for 10 years. I'm now divorced for about 6, possibly 7. I stopped counting. But bottom line is I've been through certain situations of adversity on a personal level in terms of lived through it. And also in terms of my professional experiences for 15 years, helping others in traumatic or intense situations. You know, it could be domestic violence, it could be narcissistic abuse, it could be the more heavier stuff. I don't know how much I can say or can't say. I don't want to offend anyone or be too trigger intense.
Well, we can always do a trigger warning. And so, yeah, be interested to hear about, you know, your experiences.
So trigger warning, there you go. I won't give graphic detail or whatever, but in terms of sexual abuse, human sex trafficking, that kind of stuff, that's part of the purview in terms of my 15-year career as an investigator.
Wow. Yeah. Can you just explain to us and the audience what a special victims investigator, what that entails,
sure,
what that is?
So I don't work for the NYPD, the New York City Police Department, but I do work with them. Okay. So they do the criminal stuff and we did the civil stuff for the similar or same cases. It depends on how it came in to different systems. And sometimes they'll get a case that we also get. We'll go out initially because they're swamped, because they're maybe working something else or whatever. We'll go out. If there is criminality, we'll call them. They'll have to come in. You know, we work together like that a lot. And it's basically just like you see on TV, honestly, but it's way different. Basics can be explained through what people have already seen before, which is Law and Order Special Victims Unit on TV. Things on NBC, but I could be wrong for the carrier of who broadcasts it.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to that, although a lot of the cases are way more intense. The details are more graphic. Situations are far more intense, but it's a lot of the same kind of situations in terms of assaults and abuse and children and women. And, you know, for us, my division, I've been doing nights and weekends for the last 5 years or so, give or take. And I've been working nights and weekends for the last 5 years. So we go into the home as things are going on or just after things may have happened. So there's a lot to take into account and try and calm everything down and assess and help. And ultimately, we can't force, we can't push, but we can only guide. And I mean, sometimes we can do a certain few things here or there in terms of abilities that we have through the government and our licenses and whatever. But ultimately, the goal is to guide and to support, not to take away someone's power or take away a person's power even more than has already happened.
Right, yeah.
Because we're there to really help those who are being, you know, abused or who've had their power taken away, like children.
Yeah.
Their power is less so. It's the adult that has the power. You know, a woman who's being abused or a man who's being abused, it's the person who's abusing, not the one who's being abused. The one who's doing the abuse, they have the power. So we're there to help those who are in trouble, let's say, or have issues going on, and they've had their power taken away or a lot of it taken away. So the goal is not to take more power away. The goal is to empower, you know, the child, the adult, both family, to have a safer, you know, projected future, basically.
You don't want to add trauma to trauma. You don't want to be another level of that.
Correct. Yeah, I don't want to compound it, exactly.
So this has transitioned into you helping people who are going through this. Can you tell me about how that sort of came about and what that looks like?
I was getting a lot of the same questions over and over again over my 15 years. When I first started, I was based in a different kind of field office. Now, like I mentioned, I do nights and weekends. And not the exact same questions, obviously, but similar questions, patterns of questions. I noticed the patterns and I'm like, wait a second here. I know these answers. There's lots of questions, people with the same kinds of questions. And it's a general pattern of answers. Because again, everything falls into a certain sort of rhythm in that sense. Then I'm like, okay, well, let me explore more and do more. And obviously, as time goes on, as an entrepreneur, you begin to sort of figure out what works and what doesn't work, or what will work, or where the need is in the marketplace, as we call it, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, this is sort of version 3.0. Versions 1.0 and 2.0 were geared mostly towards, you know, the child protective services kind of world in that sense.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is the same because civil law comes mostly from England, which then spread to whether it's Australia or New Zealand or Canada or the US or whatever.
Yeah.
For the most part, civil law is civil law.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few nuances here and there, but generally speaking, you know, a lot of the same stuff. And I have clients not just in the US, but internationally.
Wow.
And I'm able to guide them. It wasn't, so first it was just sort of CPS and understanding a police officer and their mindset and everything else. And it evolved to where I'm like, how can I help people more? How can I help those who need empowerment? Because they've had an imbalance of power against them. How do I empower and support people more? So it's evolved into helping anyone who needs especially information on understanding how the court system really works, the CPS world and the police world. But also I've gotten into narcissism now, where I do a lot of research and I'm doing a lot of work. I'm really opening things up, I think is the best way of saying it, in a way that makes sense and that's natural. Because a lot of the stuff you see, and I'm not knocking anyone, please understand, I'm not knocking anybody at all, but a lot of the stuff you see, it's like, well, here's a list to memorize. I'm like, why are you memorizing? Or here's a list to use. And people are like, well, I must memorize the right sentence or whatever.
Yeah.
The issue is, if a person isn't naturally saying their normal words, one is everyone, especially narcissists, but everyone can tell when someone's doing something scripted. If something's scripted, you can tell. That's one. Two, if you're not using your natural words, then the person who you're probably a parent with, because that's usually what people come to me for, co-parenting issues, dealing with a dominant or controlling or manipulative person in the workplace, or in, I don't know, a house of worship even, or your neighborhood, or whatever the case is, or maybe your brother or sister or cousin or an aunt or uncle, whatever, right? And so words matter. Like if I spoke to you about salad dressing in the supermarket, all things have to be equal, right? So if I have the right accent and I use the right words, and then we're only talking about salad dressing, then I'm an equal in that sense. But if I speak to you about your area of expertise, then I'm an equal in a different sense. And there's a different response to that. Okay. Same thing in terms of accents. Even if we're both equals in terms of that area of expertise, but my accent is different, there's going to be, if not subconscious, then things in the back of your mind that come up, oh, okay, they're from this country. Well, maybe they don't understand this, or maybe they don't understand that, or whatever the case is. Those things come up because that's how we process information.
Okay? Yeah.
Ultimately, it's about making sure that you, the person, can connect with the other person. And if they are dominant, controlling, manipulative, yes, it's 10 times harder, but there's a way to go through it, to pierce through it. Even though their agenda, their sort of way of, or wanting to do things, is they must be in control to fill that need. And they're used to certain patterns. So they need people to fulfill those patterns, right? Otherwise they feel imbalanced. And so all I'm trying to do is connect with those people who need the patterns they're used to, but to slowly chip away. And then, I mean, there's a way to do it quickly too. There can be repercussions, depends on if you know what you're doing or whatever, but ultimately, the better way is slowly.
Yeah.
And to slowly shift things so that at least the power is equal. I don't believe in anyone getting more power over somebody else. That's not my deal.
Yeah.
But I do believe that, especially with someone who's a dominant, who's controlling, manipulative, clearly they have more power because they wouldn't be controlling, manipulative, dominant if, you know, whatever. And so the way to neutralize it is to speak their language.
Right.
To connect with them in their way.
Right.
Because I personally don't believe that we as people can completely cut out to do no contact. It's like, yeah, a lot of people say do no contact. That's great. But most people can't do no contact. Not realistic.
Yeah, especially if you've got children.
Maybe 6 months, maybe a year. Whether it's children, whether it's a coworker, whether it's your aunt or uncle, whether it's the person in the house of worship, whatever it is, okay? And the more successful a person is, usually the more narcissistic they are. But that doesn't mean they're a narcissist, okay? It's very important for me to say this. People are like, oh, it's all or nothing. No.
Yeah.
First of all, narcissism is a spectrum, okay? This is a bad example, but it's the best way I can explain it for now. Just like autism is a spectrum, all right?
Yeah.
Narcissism is a spectrum. Again, not comparing the two, but just in terms of the concept of spectrum.
Yeah.
Okay? And then the biggest thing with narcissism is that because it's a spectrum, you know, you have to sort of understand where a person is. And so the more successful someone is, okay, there's different ways to measure it, right? There's questionnaires and scales and whatever, but ultimately those who are diagnosed are further up that scale. You know, you and I might be an 8, 9, or 10, or a 7, 8, 9, whatever, in terms of a lot of the scales.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because you have to have some drive, some push, some whatever, to be a surgeon, to be a general in the army, to do whatever, right? But those who are really over the top, the ones that we don't want to connect with, well, they are way further up, depending on which scale you're using. It could be a 15 out of whatever, 20, 30, 25, depends on what we're using to assess it. And that's the point.
Yeah.
It's not like an all or nothing. It's not like a whatever. It's become such an overused word, narcissism, and a dirty word. And I'm not condoning, okay? But at the same time, understanding it means appreciating that there are certain aspects that benefit us. And it's not like it's completely dirty. Just like the internet, you can watch good things and bad things, you know, on the internet. So it's the same kind of idea.
Yeah. And I think it's good to think about that, because if you go, oh, but they're not that bad, sort of like, I think if you look at it as an all or nothing, sometimes you can almost wave away certain behaviors that are narcissistic, even if the person doesn't qualify as having a personality disorder level narcissism. But those things can be problematic, and you want to know how to deal with that. And also, I think when you don't know what you're looking for is the other thing. So is a part of it sort of identification of what it looks like, what it might come up as?
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot of websites. Narcissism is now one of these big words that sort of has popped up over the last 2 to 5 years, at least, if not more, maybe 10 years, give or take. But bottom line is a lot of websites have information, but a lot of places don't always amalgamate everything, and they don't always explain things in certain ways. For example, and this is a little controversial because some psychiatrists don't appreciate me saying this, but I will say this. There's a lot of studies out there that say narcissists have low self-esteem, okay? And I don't entirely agree with that. There is a study out there that says narcissists have to have average or a little bit above average self-esteem. I actually appreciate that more, because if you have no self-esteem at all or very low self-esteem, you can't keep pushing someone down for so long, in my opinion. You have to have some gumption, some something, to be able to keep pushing someone down. If you had no self-esteem whatsoever, you couldn't sustain it, in my opinion.
That's interesting, because I would think the opposite, actually, because I'd say, well, maybe self-esteem wouldn't be the word that I'd use. I would think more like a sense of self, a fragile sense of who they are, that they're kind of trying to maintain that or protect how they feel about themselves, and they dominate other people to do that.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I would phrase it differently from what you're saying, right? Just to parse out self-esteem versus what I'm hearing you say, and if I'm wrong, let me know. All good. So narcissism, if you look at everything, okay, and obviously there are specialists with PhDs and whatever else.
Yeah.
But ultimately, almost always, and I say almost always just to be careful, it's adolescence. So we're looking at like 13-ish years old ballpark, okay, through early adulthood, where it really sort of rears and roars and develops and so on and so forth. Now, a narcissist or someone who's more narcissistic, they learned almost always from somebody else. okay, whether it's a parent, whatever it is, okay? And then it's about patterns and feeling comfortable in those patterns, right? So for example, people who get nervous or people who are more nervous, people who are more into scent, people who are more into whatever your thing is, it develops over time, but it started from somewhere. So a narcissist learns, oh, okay, I can gaslight, I can deny, all those kinds of pieces where you're sort of manipulating and tinkering and whatever, and it works. So like a child where they throw a temper tantrum and expect to get candy.
To get what they want, yeah.
Extended bedtime, watch TV, iPad, whatever the benefit thing is, right? So a narcissist, because they're used to either doing something negative or positive and getting a result, so they're used to patterns. And because they're used to patterns, they need those patterns to keep being where they are. And so if they didn't have those patterns fulfilled, then they quote unquote throw a temper tantrum, which is to cause trouble or bombing or, you know, any of those kinds of pieces.
Can you explain what bombing is? I'm not quite sure what bombing is.
Sure. So there's love bombing and trauma bonding. Love bombing, you know, like a bomb where, you know, it could look okay, whatever, but it becomes an explosion as opposed to being actual love. Doing, saying certain things. And ultimately, it's not because they love the person. It's because they're basically planting basically bombs, essentially, you know, in there to cause issues where the person thinks they're being loved, but they're not. They're being undermined in terms of who they are and people's names, dates of birth, birthdays, things they love to do, things they hate. And then that's where the manipulation comes, because the person's asking all this information. And then trauma bonding is once there's love, you've then bonded with the person, because when you love them, you're bonded. There's a bonding to it. Epigeneticists, you can go talk to them. But bottom line is, in terms of, you know, chemicals in the body and everything else, and it's really important to learn about that stuff if you can.
Right, yeah.
And once you've bonded, okay, so then it's a lot harder to pull away. It's almost like an addiction. Okay, really, it almost is. And for example, people are used to watching TV before going to bed, right? A, people say don't do that because of the rays and stuff makes you stay up a bit later than you should, versus those who read books.
Yeah.
Okay. People are into patterns a lot more than we realize. Okay. And you can break patterns. There's very easy ways to break patterns. Okay. Very easy way. It's not hard at all, but it takes some discipline, even just 5 minutes a day. And then you build up from there. There are ways to break those patterns. And so I mentioned love bombing. I mentioned trauma bonding, right? So once a person's addicted to boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse, whatever, whether it's a same-sex couple or opposite gender couple or whatever, it's a lot harder to pull away. For example, if you've been in a relationship for 6 months, 9 months, a year or longer, and this is a bit more with women than men, but men have it too. No one's exempt. Everyone has it, but it's a bit more towards women than men in general. And so sometimes I wish I could share this feeling or this thought with so-and-so. I was with them for so long, especially married couples, right? You know, you say this, being able to share whatever, I miss the companionship. Part of that companionship piece is that trauma bonding, if there was trauma, okay? Or the bonding issue where we're used to sharing with that one person. Or if you had a best friend for 30 years and you split apart from them because they changed or they passed away or whatever the case is, you miss them because there's a bond to it. There's a chemical reaction. You know, it doesn't have to be a lover. It could be a best friend too, because the more you share, and I forget the term on this, forgive me, but the more you share emotional experiences, in other words, you have an experience and there's an emotional part of it too. Like you're happy because you saw the best baseball game ever or cricket game or a football game or whatever the case is, right? You know, it was World Cup time, so I might as well throw it in there. But then there's a bond to it. You're like, oh yeah, we've shared this experience together. There's a more of a bond to it. And if you continue to share similar experiences, like maybe you'll have a sports buddy and all you do is watch sports with this person and you don't watch sports with them anymore because you moved away or whatever the case is, there's that emptiness, that lack, that void. And that's where, you know, the bonding aspect is evident. You feel it. You realize it.
Can I clarify with that? So it sounds like the narcissist uses that strategies to create that bond. So the love bombing, they're very affectionate. They give all this sort of really interested, overly interested, gaining information for themselves, yeah, for future manipulation potentially. But it feels like they really care about you. It sounds like that bond is part of why it's quite hard to leave, quite hard to separate, because they've created this bond, even if other parts of the relationship are really hard. It's almost that's intensified, that kind of bonding could be.
I'll give you an example. So like I mentioned, in terms of dating, they ask a lot of questions. Usually narcissists ask a lot more questions. Normal's the wrong word than what people are used to, what we're used to seeing in general. From two people who are well-adjusted, you know, you don't talk about your family on the first date usually. Okay, it depends. Things can be quirky, but usually. We don't go into details about birthdays and where people live and their jobs and whatever. And so a lot of people are like, well, they're asking so many attentive questions. They must really like me. They must be into me. And then it isn't about them being into the other person. It's about them wanting to use information to manipulate and control. And then to break away, the person gets used to the attentiveness, especially at the beginning, the buying of flowers, opening the car door, you know, whatever the chivalrous stuff the person does, or some of them may not do or whatever. But then at some point, just like with domestic violence abusers, but there's differences between domestic violence and narcissistic abuse. But just like with domestic violence abusers, at some point you go out of a honeymoon phase into the low part where they're like, you're a piece of nothing, you're worthless. Or if it's narcissism, it's pulling away love, not sleeping. Well, depends on genders too, can that play a role? But without getting too detailed into whatever, you know, it could be not sleeping with them as much. It could be starting to cheat on the person to make them jealous so that the person who is in love, not the narcissist, the one being abused, pulled away a bit because now they're cheating on someone, they find out. And then it's, oh, honey, I didn't mean to. I'm buying you flowers and I'm worshiping your feet and everything else. And then it's okay, I'll believe you now, and they get back together again. It becomes almost that accordion kind of thing, you know, of a separation and coming together again.
Yeah.
And that's part of that manipulation, right?
You right.
know, the love and then the bonding back and forth. And again, there's other terms that aren't coming to me, and I feel terrible about remembering it. But bottom line is those aspects are so huge because it starts to toy on the emotions and it creates a stronger addiction. It's almost like magnets. So magnets, there's a way to charge them to be even stronger bonded together. I believe it's somehow coming apart a bit more. They eventually come back together again in a bit stronger way. I could be wrong on this, but long story short is, as a person, you don't want that aspect. The person who's being narcissistically abused, that's sort of the issue. It's like magnets, it comes apart a bit and then back together again. And apart because of whatever they do, whether it's lack of attention or they travel too much or whatever it is, like, you know, whatever. And then back together again because they sweet talk their way, and that's what narcissists do, is they then sweet talk their way back in, showing affection, showing love, because the person craves it. The person got used to, the abused person got used to all that affection, all that love, all that intimacy, you know, physicality or not physicality, depends on the person and everything else. But ultimately, it's all those aspects of feeling close to someone and then taken away, and they want it back. So you're like, okay, fine. You know, I'll believe them, or I want to believe them, or I know I shouldn't believe them, but I will believe them, or whatever. You know, that's part of it. It's that accordion, that magnet kind of deal. Most people can relate to what I'm saying. This is why I said before, I'm not saying everyone's narcissistic. That's not what I'm saying at all. But this is why I said before that some people have some sort of small amounts of narcissism, where, because we're always talking to people. We're always trying to, sometimes anyway, get people to side with us or get people to, you know, I need someone to help me out with this and, you know, whatever. And maybe they don't want to originally. So you're going to try and convince them. I'm not saying people who convince other people are narcissists. I'm simply saying a lot of the same kind of things that you and I may use, as well as just the people, narcissists may use for the wrong reasons or more intensely. That's the difference. Yeah. So
more of a passion of being rather than just something that.
Yeah, it's the intent.
It's kind of like socially normal that sometimes we do things that are maybe not the most helpful or a bit manipulative.
It's the intent. It's the intent.
But the intent, yeah. And the intensity, yes. I guess, as well, and frequency. Yeah. So if someone's listening to this and going, oh my gosh, that's totally my relationship, what is sort of that first step to starting to move in a more healthy direction with that relationship?
So the first step is, in my opinion, actually realizing you're actually in a relationship that's not healthy for you. Because emotions cloud judgment. Let's be honest here, okay? Women have it a little bit better in one way. And this way is, when you're beginning the dating stages, right? Women usually have what I call a gatekeeper. Okay. There's either one, two, or three other friends.
Yeah.
As a guy, especially if you're going into a heterosexual relationship.
Right. Yeah.
Where the guy has to go meet that one, two, or three other friends, and they're the gatekeepers. If they sign off on it, then you're good to go with the person you're trying to court or date or whatever you want to call it, right? So women, you have it for a reason. Listen to your gatekeepers. I cannot stress this enough. I cannot, okay? It doesn't mean they're right all the time. Listen to them with an open mind. Don't just give your heart to a guy because they look good or whatever, you know. So the first step is really recognizing what's going on, especially if you're being isolated more and more from your friends, from your family, from the things you're used to doing, okay? And isolation is both with domestic violence and with narcissistic abuse. It looks a bit differently. For narcissism, it's a bit more abstract. For domestic violence, it can be a bit more physical. It can be abstract too for domestic violence, but generally speaking, that's the general difference. If you're being insulated more and more into only having this one person, man, woman, you know, whatever your relationship is, and there isn't much else for others, friends, family, etc., that's not healthy. A relationship should always be you and the other person, and you both grow as people, not meld into each other and push the world out. Whatever part of the world is for you, whether it's only friends, only family, because some people, their family, whatever, their friends or whatever, whatever the situation is, that's fine. It's okay to only have friends, okay to only have family, okay to only have people in the church if that's your thing, whatever, all good. But it shouldn't be that whatever connections you've had should be whittled down to like one or two from like 10 before or 20 before, whatever it is. Okay. And it's okay to change friends or people you connect with because we grow as people. We change as people. That's fine.
But you have that outside connection.
But it shouldn't be you whittle yourself down to like zero because we are social creatures. Okay. So the first thing is recognizing some of the stuff. So isolation is a big deal, or more isolation than less. Okay. I use my hands on purpose because it's not an all or nothing. It's an amount of degrees, you know, all or nothing, whatever. Fine. You get the idea. What is another big one? If you're with a narcissist or abuser, chances are they're never going to apologize. Or it's very rare.
Right.
If the person you are friends with, working with, whatever with, and they almost never or especially never apologize for anything, and especially if they flip things back on you where you feel like it's your fault or they actually say it's your fault, one of the two, again, they make you feel or they actually say, you know you're with someone you should not be with, or you've chosen to be with them and you can stay with them, but know who and what they are. That they are someone who wants to control, first establish power and then control. The literature of domestic violence is first establish power and then control. That's why my company is the reverse of that. Because I want to flip that script.
Yeah, what you're dealing with. Yeah.
That's exactly right. So female intuition, I call female psychic radar. Okay, because women have like this amazing radar kind of thing that guys don't have, that most guys have to develop.
Just grab the control back and then you get your power back.
You'll know if something feels off, you'll know. And you really have to listen to it. It doesn't mean just jump ship right away. You know, that's the first step. So the next step after is doing it the right way. Okay. Most people are like, well, let me go talk to my spouse or whatever. If you want to make the relationship work, that's fine. But remember how, as people, we know that if we say certain things that we can't take back, that's a bomb in and of itself. Okay. The same thing with, well, I'm thinking of leaving you. Wouldn't say that. I would say I'm not in a good place. Softer language where you're not giving the full flavor and then seeing what they're going to say, how they're going to react. Because if you say you're leaving or you want to leave, no, honey, I'll leave my 10 girlfriends and my 10 whatever else and, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm being a little facetious, but you get the idea, okay? You know, they'll start to sweet talk and buy flowers and attention, attention, attention until they realize, ah, they got this person back in that pattern. I mentioned patterns before. They're back in that pattern where I now know I can go manipulate somebody else at the same time, or two others or three others or whatever, especially if they're in a traveling profession, especially if they have other professions where, you know, they meet lots of people and everything else. It's ways to sort of hide certain issues, tendencies, whatever. So if you know there's an issue, yes, if you want to make it work, a person's thought is, well, You know, I don't view the other person as a narcissist. I view them as someone I want to be in a relationship with, even if they are a narcissist ultimately, because again, emotions cloud judgment. So you talk to them and say, let's try and work this out. Let's try and make it work, or marriage counseling, whatever. Most narcissists, domestic violence abusers might, but most narcissists don't usually go to counseling. They avoid it. Or if they go, they manipulate, they gaslight, they, you know, cause all sorts of chaos within a therapy scenario. Okay. So that's a huge, huge thing to remember. Okay. If you've spoken to them and it's not working out and you try other stuff.
It's a good warning. It's a good red flag if that's happening.
Don't tell them the whole thing, because the only way to leave a narcissist, especially a narcissist, an abuser too, usually, it's because they're usually physically violent and everything else. But the only way to usually leave these two people who need, because of tendencies and patterns and those pieces, is just leaving cold turkey. Okay. You've talked to them. You haven't told them the whole thing. You said you were uncomfortable or weren't happy or whatever words you want to use. Don't say you want to leave. Despite the emotions, despite the heated stuff you're going to have and arguments and everything else, you have to do the very best to keep your cool, to keep your composure. And that's where anxiety comes in. It can be one of the, can be similar, if not one of the same, but at least similar in terms of the techniques, okay, to keep composure in high emotional level situations, whether it's low vibration or high vibration emotions, okay? But ultimately, keeping that composure and not saying everything. You want to yell at him? Not good, but okay, I guess, sort of. Can't hold it in anymore? Okay. You want to use a couple of choice words, spicy words? Okay, not ideal, but okay. Please, please do not say, oh, well, I'm getting a divorce. I'm filing tomorrow morning. Do not do that. Do not do that. I cannot tell you how many horror stories people come to me and say, and eventually I ask them, I do my thing and everything else, but I get some information the first half hour to an hour. And they're like, yeah, I told them I was going to divorce them. I'm like, that's one of the bigger mistakes, because then they can start planning. And if you think they haven't been planning for this day from day one or before day one, you are deluding yourself. You are on cloud nine. You're on the moon. Okay. Narcissists have plans before you realize you need to plan for something, because they know the patterns. They know what to account for. Domestic violence abusers also, they know what to account for. Or you're not their first rodeo. You are not the first relationship they've been in, or not the fifth or tenth or whatever. So they've seen the whole progression of a relationship from their view, not from your view, where you're used to a more healthier person. Okay, it doesn't mean everyone's healthy. Everyone has their own issues. But narcissists and domestic violence abusers are more unhealthy, in my opinion, than not. And most people aren't used to seeing that. They're used to seeing their parents being slightly more healthy. They're used to seeing, you know, friends, family, whatever, a bit more healthy. Or they see on TV things that are a bit more healthy. So they think, okay, well, this guy just has this one issue, and really it's a lot more things. And so that's the point, is do not say you're getting divorced. Do not say you're leaving or whatever. Just leave. Okay, you want to leave a note? Fine. You want to call them afterwards? Fine. But make sure, especially if they know tech and they're into tech, make sure if you're going to call, use a burner phone. Do not use your phone. You don't want to be traced, because a lot of times narcissists and abusers, they have apps or they have ways of tracing your calls, pinging your phone. If your battery is on, they will find you. Okay, or they can find you. Okay. And I'm not trying to scare people. I'm not trying to turn this into a scaring fiesta or fear fiesta. I'm simply trying to explain that there's a lot of things people don't think about that I've seen throughout my career in special victims and as an entrepreneur now, that people don't realize can happen very easily, very quickly, and then you're in a bit of an issue, okay? And then the plan once you leave, if you have kids especially, but if you're going on your own, you're just yourself, just you, and you're leaving someone who's more abusive, more controlling, more manipulative, more whatever, have a plan. I'm going to go to this friend, especially if the person doesn't know that friend or doesn't know where they live, or if your friend recently moved and they can house you for at least a week. That's brilliant. Even if it's a day, better than nothing, because then they know where not to find you, because they can't find you, because they're in a place that they don't know where to go, because they haven't met that friend. They haven't been to their house for Thanksgiving or, you know, whatever, Christmas or whatever holidays or New Year's or whatever. They haven't been there for their birthday or haven't hung out at a restaurant or whatever. And that's the point, is doing things in a way that's very discreet, very low key, to be able to actually go.
Yeah, to get that separation.
Yep.
Yeah. Is it important to talk to someone if you're going through something else, to get that sort of second opinion around what's going on? Is that helpful?
I would say yes. I mean, look, if you know, you know. If you knew you wanted to marry someone because you had that feeling, that just that X factor feeling, and now you know you want to leave the person, so you just know, right? But it's always good to get second opinions. It's always good to talk to people. And one thing I will stress, especially if you've been isolated more and more and you've had good friends for 5, 10, 20, whatever years, or really good childhood friends, it's okay to call them. Yes, some of them may say, okay, I'm not speaking to you anymore because this manipulator, this narcissist, this whatever, they will create situations where they push you away from your resources, from your friends, from your supports, from family, whatever. But if your friends realize what's going on, or are mature, or didn't take things personally, whatever, and you never know. My point is, call them anyway, see what happens. They may say, okay, I'll help you just for this one thing. That's all you need. The next step, ask the next friend, can you help me for this one thing, or former friend, whatever. Can you help me for this one thing? The next person, for that one thing. You'd be surprised. One foot in front of the other, and you get to a level of safety quite quickly. Okay. Obviously, it's more ideal if this one friend says, yes, I wish you'd have done this sooner. I told you this long time ago, or whatever. Well, that's a bit easier for you, obviously. Then there's other precautions as well that I'm not going to go into. It's a very, very long-winded, like very long-winded, in terms of, you know, how to handle police if they get involved, or CPS if you have children, or child welfare, whatever you want to call it, different acronyms, different places.
Yeah. Absolutely. Different countries. Absolutely.
Okay. There's all different acronyms and stuff and whatever. No, like it's really like crazy that they're acronyms. And then there's more to that. Also, not letting your own therapist. Chances are at that point you're going to a therapist because you think you're crazy. I'm going to go get help now because I'm depressed and I'm anxious and I'm whatever. Okay. But make sure, and there's ways to make sure that your therapist will not be used against you if you have to go to court for every reason, whether it's custody, whether it's divorce, whether it's whatever. And there's ways to do all that. Okay. And therapists don't want to be misused or have their information used in court. But at the same time, they can be misquoted to the narcissist or the abuser's benefit, which is what they do. That's what they do. Okay. And you want to shut that stuff down. Okay.
So if somebody is going through sort of this sort of situation, and it sounds like you have a lot of experience, and so this would be a sort of situation where someone could get some help. How could someone connect with you to?
Yeah, that's fine.
Because we've got to have to wrap up in a second. But if people are like, oh, this sounds like my situation and I could really do with someone helping me to identify the patterns and how to speak in a way that's my words, but able to speak to the narcissist, and how to leave and how to deal with all this, because it probably feels very overwhelming. What are your best ways of getting in contact?
So the best way to reach me is if you go to the website, controlandpowerstrategy.com. I will find a shorter acronym soon. I've been having some trouble with that. But for right now, it's the long word, controlandpowerstrategy.com. You can also go to anything, whether it's social media. So any Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. You can look up Will Kesselman. You can look up CP strategy or C_P_strategy. You know, those are that's the abbreviated version on certain social media, because they wouldn't let me have the whole long thing. You can also ask to go and join my free Facebook group. There's one for women and one for men, separate, because clients prefer that. And so the former clients will stay in the Facebook group and they'll get information that way.
We'll get all your details and put them in the show notes as well, so people can get in contact, because I think in this situation, it's good to have someone who has some experience so that you can walk through the steps, because it sounds like it can be overwhelming, and it can be some things that are really unhelpful to do and some things that are really helpful to do. So great to have someone, and maybe even a community of other people who get what you're going through. So yeah, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been really interesting to talk about this. I think we all deal with narcissists to a certain extent, and sometimes we find ourselves in relationships which we really need to be out of. Sometimes the relationship's good and we need to work through anxiety. Sometimes it's not us, and it's important to be able to identify that. So yeah, thanks for sharing that and your experience.
Thank you for having me. And then one thing I will say is, what people think often is natural to do, like your friends say, try this, try that, is usually not always the right way to do it on some level, whether it's all, half, whatever. So it's important to reach someone, whether it's me or a coach you prefer, someone else, that's fine. But reach out, ask for help, even if it's just for 1 hour. Get some information, get some guidance, get some basic plan. That plan will save you a lot of headaches, money issues, heartache, whatever later on. So thank you again for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. That's it for this week's episode. If you found this episode helpful, make sure to click the follow button and please do share this with your family and friends. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook or Instagram. That's at Anxiety Specialists. And if you're interested to learn how you can live an anxiety-free life, you can get our epic Anxiety Reducer Guide absolutely free, so you can get started right away on getting your anxiety back down. Just grab the link in the show notes. Feel free to message us and let us know what you'd like to learn next. I am your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
And we're going to be back next week with more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.